You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. When the world isn't really zeroed in on you, your family, your neighborhood, or your culture, even the most mundane aspects of life can take on a deep richness and meaning when you see them reflected in art. The Flint Institute of Arts is hosting an exhibition called Community that deliberately draws our attention to Black spaces and Black lives in ways that are sometimes quiet and sometimes dramatic. Seeing people engrossed in a book at home, or chatting with family on a summer afternoon, or caught in an unguarded moment of emotion, these works bring a different kind of visual storytelling that broadens our understanding of Black history. We walked through the exhibition with Kelly Morgan, a Detroit-born curator currently working as an associate curator of American works at the Indianapolis Museum of Art at Newfields. Morgan is involved in some fascinating work at her regular job, but she came to Flint to deliver a keynote lecture associated with the exhibition. I asked her about what she wants people to know about the show.
I'll say all the time, like, people may know, you know, a particular Black artist or particular bodies, right, of Black art, but they don't really know Black culture. And so what I often try to bring to many talks is more of a deeper view, you know, into Black life, particularly in the ways in which we utilize vision in, like, the pictorial arena to make space for ourselves, you know, where it's not just the kind of hopeful promise, right, of something like you're just kind of wishing.
Aspirational.
Yes.
Arts.
You know, where we speak things, you know, into existence. And we speak our freedom into existence. And it's something that we've been doing, you know, since we've been in this country. And it's really important. The other thing that I really want to pull out is the fact that there is a value system, you know, and particularly when it comes to fine art. And when you think about the museum world or the contemporary art world, you know, even historic art art world, because I kind of live in the world of, like, historic American art, right? And the value system is, you know, upper middle class white.
That's who goes museums. That's who makes decisions.
Yes.
About what's in museums.
Yeah.
And largely that's who makes the work that populates museums.
Right. And so shows like this are so important, because you see that there are other value systems, you know, and Black people have had, you know, relationships, you know, to artwork, to American artwork, to our own artistic, you know, and cultural production.
Their work is in conversation with all of that.
Yes. And has been, will always be, you know, even though we didn't necessarily have direct access, right, to museums, you know, in the same way that the upper middle class and, you know, elite white classes had. We found different ways, you know, to that work, and to express those value systems, you know. So I'm really giving light, you know, to those value systems, and breaking it down, you know, by using a lot of the works in the show.
Can you think of a work in this collection, and take your time, that has a really exists in a really strong dialogue with the rest of the art world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Matthew Weed series does in a very, very particular way. One, because it's a visual.
Can I describe it first before we?
Oh, yes.
Just hold it right there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a series of woodcuts that depict images of men, largely young men, who have been killed by police or in prison violence, or, you know, in other, maybe incarcerated wrongly. And he's shown them to us in stark black and white with a great degree of emotional depth. And he has made some, it seems, really specific choices about what he's showing us of them. Sometimes we see their faces, and if so, they're in a moment of crisis, possibly the moment in which their lives ended. And in some, he has his subjects turn their backs to us, and we maybe see how they have been turned away, forcibly turned away from the world.
Yeah.
They're just very emotional and kind of hard to look at.
They are very. And you see that moment of panic, you know, like you said, kind of right before. You know, sometimes I hate to say it, but it's like they're beautiful, you know, because you do get this, again, this sense of humanizing them, you know, the sense of fear, you know, which Black men don't often are not really allowed. And, you know, just the way in which Black death, right, has also historically, has historically been a form of American entertainment, right, or a form of American art, you know, even in certain cases.
Yeah, putting the truth of that emotion at a moment of death in a frame, it makes it at the same time hard to look at, but impossible to look away from.
Right. I think they challenge us, right, to really think about what it means to commodify something like that. And it also plays on the history of just how much it has been commodified, right, which is what leads to the desensitized we've become, particularly to Black male death in those manners, you know. And, you know, really, I think making us recognize as both financial consumers as well as visual consumers, you know, what it is we're actually looking at.
Could you maybe tell us about some of the ways that you see artists in the show pushing back on the indifference of a wider and wider world?
Oh, God, yeah. I think that's something that's very central, you know, just to the Black experience in general. So when you look at works like the Elizabeth Catlett Flowers for George, right, and the way in which history, you know, sort of not just circumscribed him as this villain, right, or this problematic individual, but also just the Black Panther Party in general.
Just by way of context, George Jackson was one of the Soledad brothers who were in prison and put on trial for the killing of a white prison guard. It was the end of a long cycle of abuse and retribution within the prison.
Right. And, you know, to say something like Flowers for George at that, right, to soften the fact that, you know, he was a person who loved, you know, who was loved.
Could you describe the work? I mean, it's a very warm portrait.
So it's a portrait of Jackson with four flowers, you know, at the bottom. Carnations is what they really look like. And then a set of maybe six children's heads. So then, and I think about that as well, right, like bringing him as a revolutionary, right, and as a Black man, even at that, you know, close to the innocence of childhood, you know, which he may have been referencing his innocence, you know, or possible innocence, which isn't always afforded, you know, particularly to Black men that are on, you know, the front lines of our community fights. So that's one way.
I mean, the smile on his face is simply beautiful.
Yes. You know, and it is. And that's, I think that's the point for her in that piece, you know, is to humanize him, you know, and to bring him away, you know, from this mythology of like the Black dangerous revolutionary monster that really dehumanizes, right, Black men and Black boys, right, at this point. And she has tons of prints, you know, where she does that. And that's just one, you know, in an entire show, you know, of beautiful works, you know, of artists, you know, pushing back.
There are really, really affectionate portraits of aunties and grandmas sitting under a tree on a Sunday afternoon, a woman standing in her living room doing her ironing, and just an overall feel that this is life in all of its hours and all of its colors, not just the moments of crisis, which seem to be the topic that the Western art world has pushed Black people into as subjects. Tell me what you see happening in works that maybe have a little bit more formidable cast to them, like Huey Lee Smith's Slumlad.
I think in that work, that work is a quintessential representation, you know, of the kind of dreariness, right, of all of his work or a lot of his work. I think in paintings or in imagery like that, it's really a representation of the reality, you know, of the reality of Black life that Blacks are forced into, you know, that you don't necessarily, you don't wind up in the slums, you know, or in the ghetto haphazardly. You know, it was a very calculated thing, you know, from the turn of the century to present day. And I think there's also hope, you know, there as well, you know, and just in terms of the figure being such a prominent image in the forefront of the painting. Right. So there's, you know, he meets the viewer's gaze. Right. So you have to reckon, you know, with not just his condition. Right. That's not necessarily his fault. But again, his humanity.
He's a young man with years ahead of him.
Yeah. You know, and or when you think about the prison industrial complex, right, or the, just the way that systematic oppression presents itself, you know, in Black life, he may not, right, have years in front of him, you know, and is that a fair thing?
It's a moment of possibility.
Right.
If you're just joining us, my guest is curator Dr. Kelly Morgan. We're talking about the exhibition Community on view at the Flint Institute of Arts through April 19th.
There's a great deal of representation in this show from artists at the top tiers of the world. Jacob Lawrence, Romare Bearden, Kara Walker, arguably one of our greatest living contemporary artists right now, alongside regional masters and people who live right here in the community right now. What does it mean to have all those works in conversation together?
To show that this is not just a conversation that's happening at the top level, you know, and that African-American artists, you know, or even just throughout the diaspora have been having these conversations for a very long time. So when you think about, you know, entering the Black contemporary art world or that conversation, whether it's as a collector or just an enthusiast, oftentimes you can look right in your backyard, right, you know, to find sculptors, painters, you know, printmakers, collages, you know, that are doing brilliant work. You don't have to make it, you know, to Chelsea or Miami, you know, to access really great Black contemporary art.
This may be some people's first opportunity to see a work by Kara Walker. And the one that's in this show is called The Keys to the Coop. Mm-hmm. This work is one of Kara Walker's signature silhouettes that she's become very, very famous for. It's just a, you know, it's a very simple white background with the image rendered in black. Could you describe it?
Sure. It's a younger African-American female who is clothed, so it's clear that she's enslaved, and she's chasing a chicken or a rooster while she's sort of ripping the head off of it. In her right hand and in her left hand, she holds what looks like a golden key. And to a large degree, you know, I think Walker's talking, well, she's referencing a lot of things. So she's referencing like hip hop culture, you know, and the whole idea of economic upward mobility, you know, being...
having the keys to the chicken coop.
Yes.
Right in your hand.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that being the primary way, right, for one to sort of rise out of poverty or you know, an enslavement mentality. But then how that kind of doubles in contemporary society for particularly young African-Americans as a new form, right, of slave mentality. I think, you know, there's also just the violence, right, in that and, you know, in the way that she's like killing the chicken.
It's so amazing to get a throwback to rural life in the same image that gives us a statement of
contemporary
violence and dehumanization.
Mm-hmm. And I think even that is one thing about Kara Walker. Like she's an amazing like archivist and like historian. So that I read, and you know, people may disagree with me, but I read that as the way in which, you know, young Black women subverted the system, right? And you know, destroyed it in their own ways. You
heads
know,
so got whether, heads got torn off these chickens, but look at this set of keys in my hands. Mm-hmm. Now.
Or, you know, I'm tearing the heads off of chickens, you know, so that my kids won't have to do it, you know, next week, right? Or, you know, I'm breaking dishes in the kitchen, you know, to cause some sort of disruption, you know, into like the everyday life of the plantation. That lent itself to a lot of things, you know, maybe the postponement of a sale, you know, maybe the postponement of or distraction from, you know, punishment that was coming. You know, there were several things. I think, you know, we have such a myopic understanding, particularly of Black women's lives, you know, during enslavement and the ways that they resisted and pushed back, you know, as much as they could.
I have to ask you about the abstract works in this exhibition. There's a work in the show by a Detroit artist named Lester Johnson called One for Gladys Knight that, I mean, the title almost gives you more than your first glance at this very geometric black and white image with a splash of red.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind for me in looking at it, right, is like the juxtaposition of black and white particularly the vertical and horizontal lines as piano keys, you know, or the, like when you think about just, you know, the timbre of her voice, you know, and like the way, if you were looking at the waveforms, right, of just her singing, and it's 1974, right? So, you know, we're in that moment, you know, that revolutionary moment, which not a lot of people actually give, I think, Motown and Stax Records, you know, that, and it's just soul music in general. Popular culture or like popular narratives don't always make that connection, you know, that that is what those artists were singing about, right? When Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, you know, when she says, you know, calling out around the world, you know, for people to dance in the street, it wasn't to literally dance, right? You know, when James Brown is saying, you know, I'm black and I'm proud, like that one's a little more, you
overt.
Know, direct, right?
Yeah.
You know, and Gladys Knight and the Pips were, you know, were right there in that, and at that same moment, right, claiming those same things. It has always been about, you know, black freedom and revolution and liberation. And even though looking at Johnson's work, you know, you find, you think that, or you see that the lines are really confined, but, you know, if you really expand out to like how sound travels, the work actually moves beyond the frame.
There are three works in this show that museum goers are invited to vote on. One lucky piece is going to be acquired, and the public has a chance to have a vote in this. I was really struck by the fact that all three works are images of black women and black women's joy.
Yes. I think it's really important because, you know, we're in this moment right now, you know, as a field, you know, where we're really trying to, or not so much trying to, right? I think we're being forced to kind of reevaluate ourselves, how we collect, what we collect, why that's the case, you know, why these stories, these images, whether it's, you know, Native American women, you know, black women, Asian women, have consistently, right, and historically been eschewed or ignored. So to see three, you know, that really are prominent to works coming into the collection is really great. But I also think Flint has, like, this continues of history in Flint's collecting anyway. Like, I think about the Women of Our Tribe show. It was so wonderful when I walked in this morning and I saw that it was still up because it's been 3 years since I visited last. And that show had just opened when I came. And so I think to a certain degree, Flint is really spearheading a commitment, you know, to telling black women's stories. So it's nice to see that that is still, you know, central, you know, to his collecting philosophy.
Dr. Kelly Morgan, an associate curator of American art at the Indianapolis Museum of Art at Newfields. She visited Michigan recently for a talk at the Flint Institute of Arts for its exhibition Community. You can go see the show through April 19th.